Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Playful Podcast, your guide into the underground scene where we discover topics on kink and electronic music every week. Don't forget to subscribe to not miss out on our next episode. We are excited to be here today with Nicolas Schmidt, better known as Narciss. Narciss is known for their unpredictability and for creating groove. When Narciss is behind the decks, the dance floor will be vibing and climbing. In this conversation, we speak about mental health, inclusivity, and exclusion within the techno scene, and where that comes from. Berghain's door policy, creating safer spaces by treating everyone equal, meaning if quote-unquote female nipples can't be seen, then neither can male, and if that's actually creating a change or not, and much more. Let's get to it. I am Amanda, and this is Playful Podcast.
Okay, but I want to go back to the... We were just speaking about your boiler room set.
Hello, hello, guten Morgen and buongiorno. This is the morning hours with Narciss and Playful Mag. Glad to be here today. It's a balmy 1 or 2 degrees outside. And this next song is a little one that we like to call... what's a good song?
I've always wanted to do a radio show. You know what I mean?
Now that's you're almost doing it.
Like, yeah, I feel like so. This setup is like a it's a bit of a dream come true.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Like these old school American radio shows. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I grew up with because my dad was like big into like older radio shows as well. There's this one radio show that Bob Dylan was doing, and I was always like running when we had like a Sunday breakfast. And so I really grew up like listening to these like cool as fuck like radio transitions, you know what I mean, with the dudes like speaking, yeah, hello, good morning, this is the experience on 007.9.
But you have been speaking about that you had have been dealing with anxiety.
Yeah.
Is that something you also did as a kid?
Interestingly, no. It was, I think I've been like struggling with like social anxiety and that kind of stuff. I'm almost forever. Like I remember always kind of being like, or I always had to had this feeling of like having to be like really extroverted and then kind of being really loud as like, Folge, kind of like because of that, I always was like pretty extroverted, but because I felt like I had to be that, otherwise you just wouldn't make friends.
Ah, yeah.
But like the full on anxiety and panic attacks and stuff, it started like around the time that COVID started as well.
Oh, right.
Because I was like, and that's when it got really bad as well. And I was kind of like really shut in for like around like half a year, and I like wouldn't leave my apartment. Except to go like grocery shopping, but I like wasn't meeting friends. I wasn't doing anything. I was really like just kind of locking myself in my apartment and not coming out because I was so like anxious of the outside world.
But and because of the bacteria?
Because of the bacteria, but also, I don't know, it was just like this feeling of It's so difficult to describe. I mean, the one thing is I was just having panic attacks the entire time, you know, which manifest in a really nasty physical way. So you don't, I never had the feeling of like being okay enough to go outside.
Yeah. Like it's, you're going to be an embarrassment if you go outside and it start a scene. Is that the feeling?
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. That's actually exactly the feeling. Yeah. And I like didn't want to hang out with friends because I was just so a shell of myself. You know what I mean? And
did you get medication or something?
I got therapy. I went into therapy and I just like, the good thing is I wasn't depressed, so I still had some energy, you know what I mean? And it was like, I had the energy to like for weeks to just call like 30 therapists a day or something like that. And then eventually one was like, yeah, in 2 months I have a free spot. If you want, you can come by. And I was just like, yeah. And that's when it kind of got a little better.
2 months is still a long time.
It's still a long time, but yeah, it was, it eventually got a little better. But you know how it is with anxiety and these kinds of things, unfortunately. Once it manifests, it doesn't really go away anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you know it too.
Yeah.
Or like you can, it's always knocking on the door.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of. Sometimes you're like super good and it's not there at all. But most of the time you're like somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it gets a lot worse.
Or like scared it's going to happen again.
Yeah. It's this thing of like also, it's so annoying because the thing is you would have to take care of yourself almost nonstop. You would kind of have to have an eye on it and like really be good to yourself almost nonstop. But that's a really difficult balance to have when you also have kind of a job, and especially like in the creative sector. I'm also a Capricorn. So, you know, it's difficult to shut off for me. Maybe that's the thing that I haven't talked about a lot that I would reveal. It's like, I'm a really, really bad workaholic.
Really?
Really, really, really bad. And I really struggle with letting go and shutting off. Like, cause
yeah,
I'm
do many things I'm, more besides music.
Yeah. My mind is like always on a project or on an email that I still have to write or on a message that I have to respond to.
Do you feel that is comfortable to always have something to do?
No, it's the worst.
That's the worst. That's
it's really difficult to have like a private life where you're supposed to be there with your full brain power and like enjoy it. But then at the same time, you always have the feeling of not having done something. It's something that I really had to put a lot of energy into kind of trying to shut off and still do. I still struggle with that quite a bit. Because yeah. I think it's also like a creative thing. Because it's like when you make your own hours, you know what I mean? Mm. When you're kind of
freedom.
Yeah, when you have the freedom, it's also a little bit of a curse because there's always something more you can do.
Yeah.
You don't take like the card and stamp out at the end of the day and then you're done. You know, you don't have
and
to worry
about it. And then you can celebrate with an after work.
Exactly. It's just like, well, I guess for today I'm calling it, but I could still do so many more things. And that's, yeah, I really, really struggle with that.
Yeah, I get that.
We are proud to introduce Selby as a playful sponsor. And since I love secondhand wear, this is the perfect match for me. Many of us people living in Berlin love going to Boxy on a Sunday to look at secondhand clothes. And sometimes we find things that are bargains. When I went on Selby to pick clothes for this collaboration, I was looking at incredible pieces by brands like Gucci and Prada. But a secret I have is to also go to their last chance section where you find pieces for under 4 euros. They have a good quality check, so the pieces you buy will look as good as they do on picture. And with the code PLAYFUL20, you'll receive 20% off of your first purchase until the 31st of March. What's good to me is that this is a way to buy clothes that's guilt-free, and this is the reason why I go secondhand shopping, because to me that means sustainability. We simply can't buy new things all the time, and we need to take care of what's already produced. These are some of the outfits that I would wear when recording an interview for PLAYFUL podcast or going to a daytime open air in Berlin. Berlin doesn't have to be all black clothes, and as you may have figured, I really like colors and to be playful, but there are plenty of rabies black and sexy alternatives as well. Download the app and don't forget the last chance section.
But who was little Nicholas? Like, who are you when you grew up?
I was a really calm kid, from what my mom told me. I was really, really kind of resting within myself and really chill. But I also remember myself being really curious. I would always like explore. And I loved, back then, I have a thing with escapism. And like, I love like building these worlds or like going into these worlds in my mind and kind of like inventing these big stories around stuff. I think that's why I gravitate to anime and video games so much as well, because both mediums are really good at that. You know, like building these worlds that you can kind of completely like let yourself go in. It's why I like, I always say that like my favorite musician or like my favorite artists are gorillas. And it's something that they did as well. They kind of built this parallel world that you can like explore, and they have this lore that you can dive into and all this stuff. Yeah. And so I remember being like that. Also, I remember myself being a bit melancholic. I thought about like topics like death and that kind of stuff way earlier than a lot of other kids that I've heard of, where they even understood the concept like way later.
Were you having a like the death scares?
I think the concept of it just kind of was a little bit frightening to me. Yeah. Like the existential concept of death was really like
early on.
Not really, because I don't really understand it, or I couldn't really understand it. And it was just like, it felt like something eldritch almost, you know, this unexplored blackness. Wow, off to a really cheery topic for this fucking interview.
Welcome. You're gonna get out of it.
Yeah.
But did you then find escapism in clubs? Like, that's also a little bit of another world, or like, how was your club games as a teenager?
I think I found it in music. Definitely a lot. And I found a lot of positive energy in music. Funnily, you should say that. I still remember one of the most interesting club experiences that I've ever had, or one of the ones that I remember the most, was at this club. And it wasn't even that great of a club, but it was like around when I was like, I think this must have been when I was like 16 or 17. It was kind of legendary in my circles a little bit. It's long since ceased to exist. It was called Brunnen 70.
What does it mean?
Like Fountain 70, but it was because it was at Brunnenstraße 70. Ah. Mm-hmm. And it was this club where you would go into this like freight elevator, and then it would take you down into the basement. And it was always like there was this long line, and then they would like put groups from the line who would like get into the club, into the elevator, and then it would go down. And it was like this kind of insane parallel world where there were like more fucking floors than you can count as well. Wow. I think there was like 8 floors or something, but there were only 3 that you could really access publicly. The other ones you kind of had to find. Because they were like hidden in the club, and there were like walls where you had to go through labyrinths.
Sounds legendary. This
it place. Was kind of crazy, right? It sounds like it, when I talk about it now, it feels like something. Am I sure that this was a real thing, or did I dream this? But it was very real, and it was super crazy. And like, there were all these weird places that you could go through. And I remember there was like one hole in the wall, but it was like this big mouth. And then inside there was like this mirror cabinet.
Really like, illustrated.
Yeah, it like was cartoon. Crazy. And the floors aesthetically, they look really cool as well. There was like this one floor where there were like these milk bottles hanging from the ceiling, but they all had lamps inside them. And it was like, that was the lighting of the floor. It was a very, very strange club, but I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
It wasn't really the thing where it was kind of a weird thing as well, because I think there was mostly people around my age, like 16, 17, who went there as well. I have no clue how that was legal. maybe I was 18. I don't know. I can't remember, but it feels like I must have been like 16 or 17.
Do you have like bad memory?
Of like clubs?
No, of like your youth.
Yeah, I mean, of course, so many. Oh, course. Jesus, my youth was a shit show in large parts, I would say.
Why?
Man, it was difficult. I always had trouble with like fitting in because I wanted to fit in so bad back then. I wanted to be a part of like the cool kids, and I wanted to be a part of the people who don't get bullied, you know. But of course I wasn't. I always struggled with like the way I looked and also my weight and all of that stuff, you know, all of that classic good stuff that teenagers struggle with. And I was always kind of an outsider, and I was also bullied a lot. Yeah, that was really difficult. Also, my dad died when I was pretty young. That was shit. That's the thing that my...
Yeah.
That actually, you know what? That's the thing that the people don't know about.
Yeah.
I've never talked about that.
Yeah.
My dad died when I was 15.
15 is such a like...
So like probably one of the more shit ages that someone really important in your life can go. You know what I mean? Because it's like you're in such a formative age. I mean,
need support.
But actually, like, yeah, any time that someone that important passes, it's always crap. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, what's really worse? But it was definitely pretty, pretty bad time.
Yeah,
I would
but it's
say.
Also such a confusing age where you're like,
yeah.
who am I? Like before
exactly.
that, you don't really question who you are.
100%.
So that's like, ugh.
I was really struggling with finding myself. And in a way, I feel like there was a duality to it being at that moment, because on the one hand, it kind of accelerated the process of finding myself a lot, because it made me be like, I have to have something to gravitate towards now. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise I would just get lost in the void. But unfortunately, on the other hand, I realized that it also made me kind of accelerate it in a way that I then kind of built these personas for myself that weren't really me, I think. And I understood that way later, that I was kind of like just trying to fit into a picture. You know these children's
yeah.
toys where you like, you have this shape and every shape goes
oh, yeah.
into a certain thing?
Yeah.
And I think I was like, I held like this piece of myself, and I really like desperately crammed it into like different like forms that it just didn't fit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is rough. But when did you then feel that you found yourself?
Honestly, I think like 2 years ago or something.
2 years ago.
It was really long. It was like when you look at, it's also interesting when you look at pictures from myself. Ever since that time, I like switched aesthetics and the way that I clothed myself and all of that stuff so much. And I think that was a part of just not having a feeling of knowing who the hell I am. You know what I mean? And kind of always trying to find something new to gravitate towards, always trying to find something new to kind of always trying out new personas in a way.
Yeah.
And kind of not being able to find one that I truly felt like I could be myself in.
Yeah. How did you find it then?
Honestly, new friends.
Ah.
It was like, because I've also like, I had a habit of kind of being friends with people that... I had a habit of like making friends with people who I don't think were that good for me.
Yeah.
And then I went to uni for a second time, and I met a friend group there, and they really, really, really accepted me as who I am. And I felt that at the same time, I had a breakup of like a really long relationship where I definitely later realized that I was like playing the biggest fucking theater role ever. Like the person that I was in that relationship wasn't me at all, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's intense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, it kind of gravitated from there. I have one really long time friend, though. I have like one friend since I was two. He was also the one who made the Ludmilla music video, because he's like a really talented videographer, Liam. He's like the one constant when it comes to friends in my life.
Yeah, it's nice to have one who kind of have seen you.
It's interesting because he once described it as like after that breakup back then, he described it as like being this watcher, you know what I mean? Like
yeah. A fly on the wall.
Yeah, the watcher from the outside slowly looking at this progress and being like, so interesting. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to, and I get it, because you don't want to intervene like your close friends and be like, yeah, I don't think this is what you're doing, this is right, you know?
Very
or don't,
mature of
I
it.
Don't think this partner or this relationship is the right thing for you, you know what I mean? I don't, that, and I really respect him for that, because I think
yeah.
that's exactly what you should do. Because when you tell someone, hey, I don't think this relationship is the right thing to do, you're just going to provoke like a fuck you, man. What do you know about me? Like, I'm so happy with this relationship.
Yeah, it's not going to change anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that was very mature of him to understand that. Like, I don't know what age you were, though, but like, still, it sounds like he was like this.
So I think,
for a long time.
The two things that really changed were like meeting new people and ones that really fit me as well. And where I could kind of like let myself go and explore who the hell I was and kind of like, and gonna be perfectly honest, therapy, it helped a lot in like understanding that I am more fragile than I might let on, and like understanding that it's okay to be fragile and it's okay to be introverted and it's okay to be weird and it's okay to be this person who maybe doesn't really gravitate towards most people who they meet.
Yeah.
Because before that, I was like, I always had to be friends with everyone, you know what I mean? And it's this thing of like, well, maybe that's not the healthiest thing to try to do, you know what I mean? Because when you're friends with everyone, you're friends with no one.
Yeah. And maybe you try to fit in so bad, you're ignoring who you know?
Exactly.
You want, and you ignore the boundaries you actually have.
100%. I think it's like, the understanding of like, it's okay to be strange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's okay to be an outsider.
Yeah. And it's okay to have boundaries. Just to get more into your musical journey, how has that looked?
Ooh, interesting. I think I told this a couple of times, but basically it started super young as well. I grew up pretty musically because both my parents, they weren't musicians, but especially my dad was like a huge music nerd. And my kindergartner at the time, I think, told my mom that I was always like drumming on tables. Of course, it
ADD.
Was kind of, exactly. It was kind of an ADD thing, but none of them both were like, well, it's ADD. But my mom was like, musical talent. Or no, I think the kindergartner was like, actually, it could be a musical talent. And then my mom put me into drum lessons. I was 5 at the time. So I started playing the drums at 5.
Well done by her to cap, like,
it's
snap up.
It's a good, it was definitely like a good ventil.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a good outlet. Mm. And so I like, that's kind of when it started. I played the drums and then I would progress later into like also playing the guitar a little bit and playing bass guitar, playing in bands as well, and then learn to sing. So I was kind of like through the whole thing. And then when I was like, I think 14 or 15, in this musical school where I had the lessons, a DJ started to give lessons.
Oh.
Yes.
Was that something that especially happened in Berlin? Like, I don't remember that.
I have no clue.
A thing in where I'm from.
I think it's nowadays, it's a bit more of a thing. There's like workshops and stuff like that
now,
in different places as well. I know it's, for example, like some friends of mine in Wuppertal. I mean, it's also Germany, I guess, but... Some friends of mine in Wuppertal, which is of course a super small place, are giving workshops to Flinter people, like DJ workshops, which I think is super fucking cool. Awesome. Shout out to the Mauke. Shout out to the Mauke people from Wuppertal. You're doing a bang up job over there. Keep on doing what you do.
But this was like 15 years ago, no? When you
This was like I think back then it was so interesting, right? Because I started DJing. Because it was like two things that happened at that time. And I can't really say what was the first one and what was the second one, but they kind of crisscrossed into each other. And that's kind of how it started. So I picked up this video game. It was called DJ Hero.
Okay.
Yes. And no one knows about this anymore. This is completely forgotten, like lost in time. I posted something in my story about it the other day, but It was like, you know, Guitar Hero?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the DJ version of that.
All right.
This was a thing. And like, I picked it up and I loved it.
So you had
turntables. Yeah, you had like, it was a bit like, it was a bit stupid, of course, because you had like a turntable and DJing there was kind of like scratching and this kind of stuff, you know, basically all the tracks were like mashups of two tracks and you would like scratch in between them, basically. But the soundtrack was banging. Like, it was so good. Some of these mashups are like, I've listened to them on the train last week and I was like, these are absurdly good. Like, some of them are legitimately like, what the fuck? This has no right in being this good. And then the second thing that happened was that I saw these DJ lessons at the like musical school that I was at. And I was just like, okay, I'm playing this video game and I think this is basically the coolest thing ever. And in my eyes, DJing right now is like the coolest thing you could do. And then I see the DJ lessons and I'm like, well, of course I fucking want to do this in real life as well. You know what I mean? And then it was like, yeah, all right, you can take the DJ lessons. And that time I was kind of fed up with playing like guitar or whatever as well. So then I would go into the DJ lessons. And that's kind of when it all started with that side of the coin. It was kind of hilarious at first. Hello. It was kind of hilarious at first because it was like, because in my eyes, of course, coming from that video game, DJing wasn't DJing, like playing a set that's like 2 hours or longer or whatever. And just like playing these tracks. But in my eyes, DJing was making a mashup of two tracks on a mixer. And then you make the next mashup after that one is finished. Yeah. So, of course, I was like, it was a bit of a journey to even understand what the actual concept of DJing was. But yeah, eventually I got there. And then after a few years of doing that, the guy who taught me kind of revealed to me that he was the head of a party series at Trezor. He was booking the Mondays.
Oh, when was this? How long time ago?
2014. 2013, okay, yeah, 2014, yeah. Something around that time. And maybe 2015, something around that time frame. And he was booking, Electric Monday, it was called. And that's where I had my first gig.
How was that? Were you, because you mentioned before.
I was so fucking nervous. And at that time, by the way, I started as a vinyl only DJ.
Ah, okay.
And at that time, for a long time, I was a vinyl only DJ as well. And I remember like playing that first set. It was a warm up set because of course it fucking was. And I remember putting the needle on and shaking so much that I scratched almost all of my records because I was shaking so much. And I like put the needle down and I was like, of course, like
an expensive gig.
Yep. And that was a thing. But then I did a pretty good job and he got me to play more gigs there and like he booked me more often. And that was kind of how I cut my teeth at the first leg of my DJ journey, I guess.
Was there ever a moment where you felt like, I'm gonna, you know, it takes a lot of energy to tour and all this, but like, it doesn't matter. I'm gonna just, I love it so much. I'm gonna put my energy on this.
Always.
I think
because since I was a kid. Legitimately, since I think like when I was, I don't remember this, but my parents have told me this. When I was even still like a kid, like banging on drums and pots, I think like my first thing that I said as like a baby of like what I want to be was a rock star. And there was this moment way later, of course, when I was already DJing and I was reading through Groove magazine and there was this interview with Maya Jane Coles. And she was talking about, cause that's when she was just really breaking through at that time. And she was talking about coming to this crossroads of being like, okay, this is either never going to happen or even though it's going to be really
like energy consuming and exhausting and really shitty, you decide in that moment, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. That's exactly, and I'm going to put all my energy into this.
Yeah.
And of course, what she was talking about was a moment way, way later in a DJ's career. It was like when you're just about to break through and then you take the decision of, okay, I'm going to fucking take a shot at this, you know, way, way later. I think that point that she was talking about, I reached last year. But for me, reading that at that point, it's so stupid. For me, when I read that at that point, I was like, she's talking about what I'm going through right now. Me being like 15, just having started to DJ, not even really understanding what techno means, you know what I mean? And I was like, yes, I am now making this decision. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm now going to put all my energy towards. I am going to become famous DJ person. Yes, of course. Of course, fucking absurd concept, you know? But that's when, at that point, I think I made that decision. And that was...
important also, no?
It was fucking important. But in retrospect, it was also a little bit too early. Because that... I think that gave me a lot of grief a few years in the future of that. Because, I mean, let's face it, that was when I was 15. I am 28 now. You can kind of probably color in the picture of what it was like in the 13 years between that. You know what I mean? Because, I had a semi-successful career with another alias beforehand. That was the first one that I started to DJ with that I'm not going to tell.
If they dig deep, they can find.
I think so, but you have to really dig deep. And then I kind of decided, and this, I think I was like 23 at that time. I was like, okay, I'm going to start completely from scratch. And that was a difficult decision, but also one, of course, that was very, very important because that's when I started as Narciss. But so I already hit like this point where I felt like I had hit a dead end. Once, you know what I mean? And I didn't want to continue like that. And then I started from scratch. And to be honest, a lot of things happened in between where I was kind of like, I don't think this is going to happen. And funnily enough, I think only 2 years ago, I had this point of legitimately, because then I went into like uni again and studied something different and really like focused on that and being like, yeah, I should probably find a job to do with my life because I don't think this is happening. Like, I've been trying this for so long now. At this point, the chances of me still like being picked up by the scene as an artist that's like really going to hit the big time, chances are pretty slim. And then for whatever reason, it actually did happen. I kind of do attribute it to like going to uni again, because I think it made me ease off a bit and become a little bit more relaxed.
That's
kind of when I also started like making music just for fun, you know what I mean? And I was kind of like, okay, if this isn't going to be my job, then I can just do what I want as well. And I think me relaxing on that a little bit and
maybe not having like to take so many gigs that drains the energy because you need to pay rent.
Exactly. And also like being like the also not having that pressure, not putting that pressure on myself of like, I have to make it big. I have to become famous. I have to do this and that was super, super important in retrospect. Cause that I think was the most important thing. I think that's also like the tip that I give to like most people who ask about how do they make it in the scene is don't try to make it in the scene. Do it because you like doing it and do it because you have fun with it. But don't do it to earn money because you're just going to get crushed by by yourself in the end, to be honest. Just going to get crushed by yourself and you're not going to have a good time. You're not going to enjoy it. And I think if you have fun and if you enjoy it, then at some point something might happen and it will make you overjoyed because at that point it's just a cherry on top.
Yeah.
But if nothing happens, then you're still having fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
It's like a win-win situation. Like, you're having fun anyway. And then if something good happens, something good happens. That's nice.
Yeah. Know? Was there ever a moment then where you felt like, damn, I'm making it. Like, I made it.
Yeah, last year.
What was there a day, a time? Or was it
overall? So it was, I still remember the moment when I decided that I was going to, when I actually had the Maya Jane Coles moment. Where I was like, you know what? I am now as close as I'm ever going to come to just be like, fuck it. I'm just going to try this now. I'm going to like quit my fucking job and I'm going to try and go.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Full throttle on music. And it was in May last year.
In May, what happened then?
I joined a booking agency, like a new one. Or shortly after. And also like gigs started to increase at that time. And I noticed that it was becoming more than I could like mentally handle because I was feeling super burned out. It was because like I was gigging. And then I was also like still working the job. Yeah. And then I was also like writing my bachelor thesis.
Did you still have panic attacks at that time?
No, not that much, but I wasn't doing great mentally. I was just very burned out. But like it was fucking the best decision that I could have made because it just kind of rose from there. It got more and more and more. Like the moment where I was like, holy shit, I've made it. There were a few where I was like, I don't think it's the curse of being an artist, right? Because I don't think the point of holy shit, I've made it ever comes. It kind of progresses back into this thing where I said I can never really let go of work. Because I think like the moment where you're like, okay, and now I can rest, it doesn't come. Because you can never really rest. You know what I mean? You always have to continue. But there were...
You need to put yourself at rest. Like, exactly. Brutally.
But there were a lot of moments that came in the meantime where I was like, in my wildest dreams, I wouldn't have thought that this moment would still come. And it's fucking wonderful that it did. And I can't believe that it did. Boiler Room was one. Seeing like the recording of the Boiler Room and seeing the logo pop up and the announcer like announce my name. That was surreal. I never saw that coming.
You said
No, the authentic narcissist experience.
Yeah, what is that? Can you explain?
I think just fun, no? Yeah. I think just like, I don't know, don't think too much about like, this has to happen right now and this has to happen now and this is what it has to feel like, but just like, I don't know, have authentic fun. Have a drink or don't, if you don't drink, just like, I don't know, but don't stand by the bar and watch it happen, but like, get into the crowd, get involved, maybe like dance with some people, maybe then never see them again afterwards, but just like have a good time for an hour or two or three.
You
or
also
four.
You also said before that this is probably the gig you are the most proud of, the whole flow of it.
I think from the ones that are on the internet, you know what I mean? Like the mixes and the ones that you can find online. This is the one that I'm the most proud of. Cause I think it's the most, it showcases the energy that I want to bring the most or the best. And it's also my favorite set of the ones that you can find online, because it's or solo at least, because it's very, very housey and groovy, but also fast. And I don't know, I like the whole energy of that set. I think it's honestly kind of from front to back, it's just my favorite, because it also showcases me being nervous as hell, you know, and
in the beginning,
starting the set and being oof. Still kind of empty in here, fucking hell. Like it's all right, but it's not a legendary Boiler Room crowd, you know what I mean? And then kind of because in the set you see this happen, of course, you see people climb up on the thing behind me and shit, and it going completely nuts. But I didn't see that because I had my backs to them. So there's this moment, and I think this was the one that they used on 90% of their social media for the set as well, where I play this Tony DeVitt track, who's also an icon to me. And I play it and I turn around and I look at the people and I'm like, oh, they climbed the thing behind me. Holy shit. There's so many people. What the fuck? And then it just goes completely bonkers behind me and the whole room erupts. And it's such a nice moment because it was also for me oh my God, it worked. Yeah. I got him.
You lift the roof off.
Yeah, yeah. And you see it in my eyes of this legitimate moment of being just surprised and very joyful.
Oh, wow. So nice. Let me know if I'm mistaken, but you also said sometime that you think the techno scene is stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean with that?
I think I don't want to hurt any feelings, but I think the thing is the problem is that the techno scene for a lot of years has focused on exclusivity a lot. So I think we now live in a world where, or let me rephrase, this is a scene that comes from a queer background. You know what I mean? Techno has always come from a queer black background. And I think there's this German mentality to techno that I don't really fuck with, which is very, very exclusive. Very, very, you have to look this way. You have to dress this way. You have to dance this way. You have to be these things for you to be techno or fit into techno. And I think in a scene that comes from a queer background that's supposed to be all about inclusivity, that's just, I don't know, that doesn't really gel with me. I don't really like that mindset. I don't like exclusive scenes anyway. It's kind of funny to me because when I started making music, I hadn't been to clubs. When I started DJing, you know, when I started DJing, I hadn't been to clubs at all. And that happened afterwards. It's a philosophical thing, but I think I'm not sure that if I would have known about the people, how they sometimes behave in the scene and how they behave at the doors of clubs and how excluding it is sometimes and how with their nose up it sometimes is. Not sure if I would have gone for techno as a genre, funnily enough. Maybe I would have chosen something completely different. But I love the music and that's why I went into it, which is now pretty nice because now you can kind of at least try to change it from the inside, you know, like a mole. Also musically as well, because I think it's musically a little stiff sometimes as well, you know what I mean? And we're just coming into a trend where the music is opening up a little bit and kind of a lot of interesting things are happening. It's kind of progressing away from very, very minimal Tool techno, but I think, yeah, there is like a lot of stiffness to a scene that's all about letting go and having a good time, which is weird to me. It's like, I think a lot of it just comes from like, honestly, I think a lot of it just comes from like the Berghain hype. Cause like the, of course, like the biggest and greatest years of the club are way, way past nowadays. But like, sure, there used to be a time when Berghain was like the best club in the world, I'm sure. And the exclusivity of that door and the rejection that you could get at that door has kind of made it so techno has all about becoming, how do I get into this scene and how do I fit, you know?
How am I accepted?
Yeah. Interesting. There's an interesting parallel to like fitting in that we talked about earlier. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
I was just thinking about it. I was actually thinking that, do you think that, but you said that you started DJing before you got into techno. That's why I didn't see the connection that strongly.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, when you, because you try to fit in so much and this maybe reminds you also of how, I don't know. Like,
and it's like, I always then at that point when, or like nowadays, I like to, like, the group that I have gathered around me is probably as far removed from, like, the classic techno crowd that you could probably find. A lot of my friends don't even like techno, you know what I mean? And it's like I always gravitated more towards the people who also, like, didn't fit in, because those were the ones who I could actually hang out with. You know, the cool people didn't fucking want me anyway. And I think that that is like a part of my like dislike for that, because it's all about fitting in. It's all about like being like a part of like the fucking cool kids behind the schoolyard who are like smoking and looking down on the other ones who are like walking by, you
or
know
rude.
What I mean? Yeah, exactly. All of it. It's so fucking German. It bothers the crap out of me, because like we as Germans, we're not exactly known for being friendly, cool, or even like at all like interesting in even the slightest regard. You know what I mean? When you look at like German culture and German food, I mean, you can kind of judge a culture a lot of the times by its food, right? When you look at like fucking like, let's take Spanish food, you know, like, or tapas. It's all about like sitting together at a table, having fun, sharing all of these plates. Then you look at German food. Okay, here's your protein. Here's your carb. Here's some vitamins. Oh, you want more? Go fuck yourself. You should have said earlier. Or like, oh, you want more? Well, then tell the chef to give you more. And if it's out, not your luck. No, you can't have any of my food. Fuck off. We're having separate meals here. You know what I mean? And it's like, all of it is so, and it kind of fits into this whole thing of like, there's not a lot of like, there's not a lot of being, I don't see techno and music about being rejected. I see it as like, oh, fucking welcome. Like, come in, have some fun, like, have a good time, unless you're an asshole or like, fucking homophobe or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, there's some obvious borders to who I think should be allowed to party in like queer clubs and techno clubs.
Yeah, do you think that still, as you mentioned, that techno is like stiff,
mm-hmm.
but there are still these values. Do you think that it actually is so?
Interesting question. I think it should be. In Berlin, a lot of the time, it definitely is. Like, when you look at a lot of clubs, I think they have some very, very, very clear values, and they definitely abide by them in both their bookings and in the way that they handle their parties and their club staff as well. But I think when you look at it more on an international level, it definitely becomes more about, like, of course, about like breaking even at the end of the night, or not, if we're being honest, not breaking even, but how much money can we make? It becomes more about the bottom line than about like a certain set of values.
I've heard this about especially one big party in France.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Ah, that's what you mean. So like parties that promote themselves in that way and with a certain core set of values that's not about that at all. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that happens a lot. I think. Because it's also like, now I get it. Yeah. Okay. So I think this is also a thing that comes from like techno getting more big in the world. Because it's, like I said, it kind of originated from like a queer scene, originated from a gay scene. And I mean, even like, I know I look down on that, like this, like, we're going to order this Amazon harness and then like fucking fit in at the door of a club. And then everyone just wears the same Amazon harness. But you know, that thing as well, where does this come from? Like these harnesses and all of this like clothing, it comes from the queer scene, you know, like harnesses were just like, I grew up in Berlin and I lived near Nollendorfplatz earlier, which is like the biggest like gay queer Kiez in Berlin. And these like images of the harnesses and all of that stuff, I grew up with that. This is something that I've seen my entire life because it's just like part of like the gay scene, this aesthetic, these clothes or the lack of them. And it's interesting to see them being like, just like, yeah, you just dress this way in techno now, which is interesting because a lot of these people who dress like this are as straight as you can be, which in my mind, that's not really a problem. You can dress any way that you want, of course. You know what I mean? But it's...
If it's not accepting of where it comes from.
Exactly. Yeah. It has to, and I think that's kind of why a lot of international parties, or this is why a lot of the time, I think the cool thing to do is be like a queer party or like a gay party and promote yourself that way. Because it's like, that's where it all stems from. And that's also like the inclusive values of the techno scene. And maybe it's even like a little bit quirky where you live to be like, yeah, we're totally like this gay queer scene. Yeah, totally. But then you also have to really, really, really like be careful of like the vibe in the room and all of that stuff. And yeah, I think that's, I mean, we talked about it earlier and I really don't like exclusivity when it's about how you look and how cool you are and all these things. But if you promote yourself as a party with a very clear set of core values, then I think you do have to be slightly selective about who you let into your party, because then it's all about making a safe space for the people inside. So then when you let someone in who's even a little bit homophobic, this can turn everything on its head. You know what I mean? Because it makes the people who are inside feel less safe. It's kind of sad because, of course, I think, or at least I think I wasn't there for it, but this is how I imagine the door for Berghain started. It started as like, hey, we're a gay club. Like, we don't want anybody inside who's an asshole or who's a homophobe. And then it turned into this shadow of itself where it's like, okay, let's maybe be a bit more exclusive and make people think there's a logic to who we exclude, but we're going to exclude some more people because also more people are coming to the club and we have a limited amount of space. So let's exclude some more people. And then it turned into this like monstrosity of like the Berghain door. You know what I mean? And it's like this, oh, everybody's afraid of the Berghain door. But it comes from a background that is well-intentioned. But nowadays it's just, I think, yeah, a shadow of that. Because, you know, fuck, a lot of gay friends of mine are being rejected at the Berghain door. Well, I don't know. Straight dudes in an Amazon harness are being let in. So, you know.
Dot.
Yeah.
What's your view on creating a safe space?
It's, I think, probably the most important thing. I think it's like...
How can one do that?
It's not the easiest thing to do. It's because you have to watch, have a very watchful eye on an incredible amount of factors. I think it was the DJ Stranger who once described like not safe space, but like parties in general as being 100 different factors. And they all have to be good for a party to be good. If one is off, then it's already not a good party anymore.
I want to see that list.
And I think it's, and the DJ who's playing is just one of those like 50 factors for a party to be good. You know what I mean? And it's similar with creating a safe space. You have to have a very watchful eye on a tons of different things. The people in the club, who are they? Are they taking space away from like, are they behaving a certain way that makes people feel super uncomfortable? Who's at the door? Are they making people outside queuing feel shit and uncomfortable? Who's your staff? What's your staff like? Are they accepting of everyone? Like, are they accepting of people no matter how crazy they might be, how naked they might be?
This is so, I love this because this is something that is not normal to the rest of the world, to be naked and free in clubs.
Yeah.
It's like you'd get thrown out if you were like, had like, quote unquote, female tits out in the air.
A buddy of mine, Janis Zielinski, who also makes really fucking nice music. He's from Hanover, and he had like this thing. Of being, because he's like involved with this new, like open air club in Hanover. He's kind of helped build it and stuff. It's this open air space, and the way that he explained it to me, because I was playing with him on the weekend, we were like on a lineup together, and we were talking about this, and I think it's super cool, because it's like, it's also kind of like part of this like techno TikTok trend that I don't have anything against. I'm on TikTok as well, you know what I mean? But I think it's like this thing of like showing like these super jacked fucking ripped dudes dancing topless. But then as soon as like a woman dances topless, it's like a problem in a lot of clubs in the world. And so he says like, okay, this is Hanover. Like we're not going to have, it's not going to be possible for the crowd to have the type of club where a woman just takes a shirt off and it's fine. And she's not going to get bothered or sexualized by anyone. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. So what we're going to do is dudes are not allowed to take their shirt off either. And I think that's a really fucking interesting point, because it's like, yeah, fair enough. Like
statement.
A nipple is a nipple, no matter on what person it is. Please, like, just don't. If you want to like get naked, there's plenty of ways to do that. You can wear like a bikini top or like a mesh top or all of this kind of stuff, but be respectful, because it has to be a room where everyone has to feel comfortable and also on a similar level. Everyone has to have the same freedoms as equal. Other people. Equal. Thank you. It's about equality in the end. Everyone has to feel equal. And as soon as one person has more freedoms than another one, it becomes kind of shit. So I think that's also, I mean, it's kind of, it's a difficult topic that you could probably discuss a lot. Because it's also like, it goes into this area of like, okay, in my opinion, it makes a club space more equal indeed, but it also has to do with prohibiting something. So does that really make it more equal if you have to prohibit something? In my opinion, it does, but in probably like a lot of other people's mind, it doesn't. But it's a choice, and in my opinion, it's a good one. It's the same with a Institut für Zukunft in Leipzig. It's also like...
They do the same?
Yeah, they do the same.
Very interesting, yeah. And they feel that kind of gets the message out. Also, you know, like it's also... If it's like male have to also wear a shirt, they have also to question why.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly. It's not like a... I think it anything to kind of... incept people, you know what I mean? And get maybe if it's like one of them starts thinking about it, and then they'll come to some understandings that are really important for like their understanding of gender equality and all that stuff. So, you know,
yeah.
I think it's a cool choice to make.
Definitely.
So yeah, nudity in clubs is a big topic, and one that you can also take similar stands on, I guess.
But yeah.
Just something that I thought of. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
We finished?
No, I have
Yeah.
A little this or that.
Okay, nice. I love that.
We have now come to the part of the podcast where if you're a Patreon, you'll get to listen to me and Narcissus discussing dating in Berlin and people being extra flaky in metropolitan cities. We also speak about where they can find inspiration when feeling uninspired, as well as their view on goal setting. Go to patreon.com/playfulmagazine.
That shit. Fuck yes. Yeah. Oh, I always wanted to do this in an interview. Yeah. You know Over Under, this show by Pitchfork?
No.
Okay, it's basically this, they get like musicians and artists and then ask them if something is overrated or underrated.
Oh, I love that.
It's a cool show. You should watch it.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to start doing that here. That's super fun. That could be the next.
I'll show you the episode with Erica Badu after the interview.
Yes.
It's the best.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. Yeah, maybe I can take inspiration.
Yep.
All right. So, introvert or extrovert?
My partner would disagree with me on this. No, extrovert, still. I think I am an introvert at heart, but the way that I behave is extroverted.
Introvert at heart?
Yeah.
So you need to recharge your batteries alone.
But I am more of an extrovert than I am an introvert. Because through my partner and some of my friends, I have seen what a real introvert is like. And I would not be on stages playing for huge crowds if I was a true introvert.
Yeah. High on life or whatever comes your way along the night?
High on life, for sure.
Yeah, what's your view on drugs?
I don't mind them.
A true Berliner, I mean.
I wouldn't judge anyone who does drugs except for maybe like GHB, because I don't fuck with the whole idea of that, and I think it's more dangerous than it can be positive. But you can put in your body whatever you want, but I personally never did like chemical drugs. So for me, I quit smoking weed as well a couple of years ago, and I don't know, it's just, I don't think I'm the right person to take drugs.
Yeah, was that a decision that changed something?
I think so, yeah. I think it made me be a bit less maybe confused about some things. But it was also just, I quit because I wasn't enjoying it anymore, you know? So why would I do it?
It was easy then for you to
quit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Comfort or fashion?
Ooh. Oh, that's so difficult. Fuck. Fashion.
Yeah,
I do love my comfort and like being wrapped in a blanket in my pajamas, but I love fucking dressing up and putting on my makeup and prettying myself to the most heavy degree that you can go. Like, I love that shit.
Yeah, what does it make you feel?
Affirmed. I think it makes me feel pretty and it makes me feel affirmed in my own self.
Yeah.
It makes me feel hot as fuck.
Ooh, I love it.
And I think I love feeling hot as fuck more than I love feeling comfortable. Because it's very easy for me to feel comfortable and it's not that easy for me to feel hot as fuck.
Yes. People can assume it would be easy for you to feel hot as fuck because you're just so this is my view, but that you're naturally you and comfortable in you. But then when we listen to the interview, we also know that it's, you know, often there has been a long journey up until coming to being comfortable.
So far from the truth. I still struggle with that so much. It's still like looking at myself in the mirror is still like rolling a dice every time that I do it and like seeing what it lands on. And because I've struggled with my self-worth my entire life.
Yeah.
Must feel amazing to not like open your phone camera and think like, ugh.
Yeah. But I think it's also the subtle art of not giving a fuck, you know?
Yeah, like, true. Facts.
And I think that comes with like having judged yourself so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah. Xbox or Nintendo?
Nintendo. Don't even have to think about it. 100% Nintendo. Every bone in my body was made from Nintendo, I think. Like, yeah. I could talk about this for hours, but it's like, it's the easiest choice ever. Like,
voice message or text only?
voice message.
Ah, you're a voice
message. I have really big fingers.
Ah, and nails
so,
also.
Yeah, and nails. So, like, I like to send voice messages way more. But they're also really long because I speak very slowly. And my friends get bothered by that a lot because then they have to sit through, like, a minute and a half of voice message versus 15 seconds of reading, you know? Yeah. So I don't do it as much as I would like to, but yeah, voice message.
You're trying to be nice.
Also, shout out to phone calls. You know what I mean?
A quick phone call.
A quick phone call. I just read probably this, my favorite.
I just read this meme that, like, nowadays we have to, like, let people know that we're going to call them in 15 minutes because everyone needs to mentally prepare.
Yeah.
And how much that has changed since before, where you just, like, rang someone up, like, you know.
Hey, can you bring Douglas to the phone? Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. We're so shaped by our time.
Yep, facts.
Okay. Hit the gym or dancing clubs?
In my free time, hit the gym, I think. Because dancing in clubs is very freeing and lovely. But I need, it's not, because of the ADHD as well, I need something that's even more physical to, like, get me back into my own brain and get me back into my own body. Dancing isn't enough.
Did you realize that over the pandemic?
Yeah.
Was that your psychologist who told you?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
I also started it beforehand, but yeah. And I notice it every time that I'm doing worse with my anxiety. I, like, look at my calendar when I've been to the gym the last time, and it was like ages ago. And I was just like, well, why am I not surprised?
Psychology or spirituality?
Well, these are hard. Fucking hell. I think psychology, because psychology has helped me more in my life than spirituality has. I like spirituality, and I really fuck with, like, some like Wicca and the whole, like, witches on TikTok and all of that stuff. I really, really fuck with that.
Isn't it scary also? It's a little bit dark also. No,
but it's like, it's not scary dark. You know what I mean? Isn't it? It's like a goth in school. It's not scary dark. It's like
the Circle. What's the name of the film?
Coven? No. Wait. Yeah.
The witches.
Yeah.
But actually, I saw Beverly Housewife of Beverly Hills, and there was one Wicca in there.
Yeah.
But she puts, like, mean spells on people.
But that's, like, super against the beliefs of Wicca. There's no, like, black magic or, like, doing some shit to someone that they don't want in Wicca beliefs. You know what I mean?
Okay. So she's
even
not
something
real...
like a love spell is kind of against the rules of that because it infringes on someone else's space. And Wicca, basically what it is in the end, it's just kind of like positive affirmations with a little bit of spice, you know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah, and I really fuck with. But still, I think psychology has helped me more throughout my life than spiritualism. So I'm going to go with psychology.
Yeah. Hugs or kisses?
Gosh almighty.
Looks like kisses.
Yeah, it does. I think kisses. Because a hug... But a kiss can't give you the comfort that a hug does. Like, you know, when you're, like, crying and you're, like, feeling super shit, you don't want a kiss, you want a hug.
Yeah.
Then again, kisses can be sexy.
Hugs can be sexy, too.
I think I'm going to go with hugs because hugs have more... They have a bit more of things that you can do with them. You know what I mean?
That's
hugs
true.
could also be like cuddling. So you can go kind of sexy with a hug and you can kind of cook a hug as you want it. But with a kiss, it's a kiss.
Yeah.
It's so fucking exciting when you have a kiss for the first time. But overall, you can just do more with a hug and you
can work always.
You can translate more feelings with a hug than with a kiss. You know what I mean?
Very well thought through.
Mm.
Yes, I agree. Pokemon or Digimon?
Pokemon.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, Digimon is like the fake bag.
No, I like Digimon as well.
Okay.
I really like Digimon as well,
really?
Actually. Yeah, I really like him. It's interesting because it's actually kind of more of a darker version than Pokemon.
Okay.
Digimon is way darker than Pokemon. Way, way, way darker. It's like, there are some topics in like Digimon to this day that are so fucking dark that I like can't believe that they marketed this to fucking children, like in parts. Still remember one Digimon movie that I watched in cinemas that was so dark that it like kind of traumatized me in parts even. But like Pokemon is just like, it's the OG. It's the one for me. I think I'm going to fucking love Pokemon until the day that I die. I'm going to play all the games if they're fucking shit as hell, which the new ones are actually really good. The new ones, like they have some bad, guys, listen to me. Okay. They have some bad elements. I know they have a lot of glitches, but the story is really good. It's the best that it's ever been. Please. So yeah, I just love Pokemon so dearly. It's such a big part of my childhood. And I'm going to love that until the day that I die.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. We learned so much. Last one. Drag show or lights show?
Drag show.
Yes.
Always.
Boom. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a hug. This was amazing.
This was it for Playful Podcast this week, but please follow, subscribe, and listen to our next episode. And if you want to have a say about future artists or even ask your own question to one of our guests, follow us on Instagram and make sure to add your question when we lift our coming guests. Thank you so much for joining and see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.